The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
The job ahead is difficult. It requires courage and dedication. It requires faith. The Zeon colony has existed for nearly half a century.
Watch his mouth.
If we fulfill our own greatness, that will all be ended. Working together.
Captain, his speech follows no logical pattern.
Random sentences strung together.
He looks drugged, Jim. Almost at a cataleptic state.
To reach our goal, must be decisive. Every thought directed toward a goal. This planet can become a paradise if we are willing to pay the price.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, July 10th, 2024. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's Just Right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Today's show opener was borrowed from an episode of the original 1960s Star Trek series titled Patterns of Force. It was about a planet that had fallen to the forces of fascism, in particular the Nazi version, and whose leader was in every way a haunting reflection of U.S. President Joe Biden.
They've kept what's left of him as a figurehead.
Quite correct.
Biden's dysfunctional performance during the June 28th CNN 2024 presidential debate was an eye-opener for many who have only been following the mainstream media coverage of the election and of Biden himself. Given our weekly program broadcast schedule, this is really our first opportunity to take a closer look at that debate and perhaps make a few observations that most of the analysts that I've heard so far have not made any mention of. Likely due to the shocking distraction provided by Biden's condition during the debate. And on a related topic to the debate, between our show last week and our show today was America's July 4th Independence Day celebration, causing us to recall Donald Trump's magnificent 2020 speech given in front of Mount Rushmore. Now there was a demonstration of what a real American president sounds like. And in keeping with that 4th of July theme, our closing smile at the end of today's show is a bit longer than our usual selections, as it features an old Robin Williams skit that has recently resurfaced and has been going viral on the internet over the past couple of weeks. It was quite a creative performance, in which Williams was costumed as the American flag, and spoke in the first person as the character of the flag itself. Not only funny, but it also included some sobering insights and warnings about the decline of the American culture and identity that we are still witnessing today. It all begins right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org, hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave, follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. Now, as a Canadian, I would be remiss to not mentioning that each year, 3 days before the annual Independence Day celebrations in the United States on July 4th, Canada celebrates Canada Day every July 1st. Though not as an independent state, but as an extension of the British Empire, which created Canada on July 1, 1867, via the British North America Act. Today that act is known as the Constitution Act, 1867. Originally called Dominion Day, before the name was changed to Canada Day on October 27, 1982, it was a far better description of Canada in terms of its nationhood status. Canada was, and still is, a creature of British statute. So we aren't even a country. We are, to borrow a phrase from Salim Mansour, a vassal state, a nationalistic appendage of a greater empire, in this case being the British Empire, from which America freed itself. The Government of Canada website stresses that Canada Day highlights the richness of our land, our diversity, our culture, our contributions, but above all, our people. Since 1868, July 1st is an opportunity for Canadians from all communities to come together. Wow. In other words, multiculturalism. No mention of protecting anyone's individual rights or freedom or even legitimate citizenship status. In fact, under the government of Justin Trudeau, Canada is abandoning its sovereignty and nationhood entirely to become part of the globalist tyranny, to which I can only say, oh, Canada. Meanwhile, south of the Canadian border, the June 28th pre-presidential debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden has been subject to much analysis, most of it about Biden's absolutely abysmal performance and his ill health. But it seems to me that most people missed the real significance of the debate and the wealth of information that was revealed within. Now, during the course of the debate, and roughly in chronological order, both candidates were confronted with questions about the following issues: the economy, the deficit, COVID, Medicare, abortion, immigration, border security, foreign policy, Vladimir Putin, the Mideast, democracy, elections, racism, black unemployment, black crime rates, the climate crisis, social security, child care, drug addiction, and of course, the inevitable personality traits and conflicts that exist between the two contestants. And you know what? I thought there was a lot more substance to that debate than most commentators, either on the left or right, seem to acknowledge. For them, it was mostly a conflict of personalities, with a built-in assumption that Biden was too incoherent and unfocused to have offered anything of value in terms of information or the policies of the Democratic Party. So what follows now, on both sides of our upcoming bumper break, is a collage sampling of some of the topics raised during the presidential debate, in no particular order, but which I thought generally captured the tone of the event and some of the key arguments that I want to address when we return.
The truth is, I'm the only president this century that doesn't have any, this decade, that doesn't have any troops dying anywhere in the world like he did.
We got hit with COVID. We did a lot to fix it. I gave him an unbelievable situation with all of the therapeutics and all of the things that we came up with. We gave him something great. Remember, more people died under his administration, even though we had largely fixed it. More people died under his administration than our administration, and we were right in the middle of it, something which a lot of people don't like to talk about. But he had far more people dying in his administration. He did the mandate, which is a disaster, mandating it. The vaccine went out. He did a mandate on the vaccine, which is the thing that people most objected to about the vaccine. And he did a very poor job, just a very poor job. And I will tell you, not only poor there, but throughout the entire world, we're no longer respected as a country. They don't respect our leadership. They don't respect the United States anymore. We're like a third world nation between weaponization of his election, trying to go after his political opponent, all of the things he's done. We've become like a third world nation, and it's a shame. The damage he's done to our country, and I'd love to ask him and Will why he allowed millions of people to come in here from prisons, jails, and mental institutions to come into our country and destroy our country.
He had the largest national debt of any president in a four-year period, number one. Number two, he got $2 trillion tax cut, benefited the very wealthy. What I'm going to do is fix the tax system. For example, we have 1,000 trillionaires in America, billionaires in America. And what's happening? They're in a situation where they, in fact, pay 8.2% in taxes. If they just paid 24%, 25%, either one of those numbers, they'd raise $500 million, billion dollars, I should say, in a 10-year period. We'd be able to wipe out his debt. We'd be able to help make sure that all those things we need to do, child care, elder care, making sure that we continue to strengthen our health care system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
What's happened to our country in the last 4 years is not to be believed. Foreign countries, I'm friends with a lot of people, they cannot believe what happened to the United States of America. We're no longer respected. They don't like us. We give them everything they want, and they think we're stupid. They think we're very stupid people. What we're doing for other countries, and they do nothing for us. What this man has done is absolutely criminal.
Let's turn now to the issue of immigration and border security. President Biden, a record number of migrants have illegally crossed the southern border on your watch, overwhelming border states and overburdening cities such as New York and Chicago, and in some cases causing real safety and security concerns. Given that, why should voters trust you to solve this crisis?
Because we worked very hard to get a bipartisan agreement that not only changed all of that, it made sure that we were in a situation where you had no circumstance where they could come across the border with the number of border police there are now. We significantly increased the number of asylum officers. By the way, the Border Patrol endorsed me, endorsed my position. In addition to that, we found ourselves in a situation where when he was president, he was separating babies from their mothers, putting them in cages, making sure the families were separated. That's not the right way to go. What I've done since I've changed the law, what's happened? I've changed it in a way that now you're in a situation where there are 40% fewer people coming across the border illegally. That's better than when he left office. And I'm going to continue to move until we get the total ban on the total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either. We're literally an uncivilized country now. He doesn't want it to be. He just doesn't know. He opened the borders. Nobody's ever seen anything like. And we have to get a lot of these people out, and we have to get them out fast because they're going to destroy our country. Just take a look at where they're living. They're living in luxury hotels in New York City and other places. Our veterans are on the street. They're dying because he doesn't care about our veterans. He doesn't care. He doesn't like the military at all. And he doesn't care about our veterans. Nobody's been worse.
Every single thing he said is a lie. Every single one. For example, veterans are a hell of a lot better off since I passed the PACT Act. 1 million of them now have insurance and their families have it. Their families have it because what happened, whether it was Agent Orange or burn pits, they're all being covered now. And his group opposed that. We're also in a situation where we have great respect for veterans. My son spent a year in Iraq, living one next to one of those burn pits, came back with stage 4 glioblastoma. I was recently in France for D-Day, and I spoke all about those heroes that died. I went to the World War I cemetery he refused to go to. He was standing with his 4-star general, and he told me, he said, I don't want to go in there because they're a bunch of losers and suckers. My son was not a loser, was not a sucker. You're the sucker. You're the loser.
First of all, that was a made-up quote, suckers and losers. They made it up. It was in a third-rate magazine that's failing, like many of these magazines. He made that up. He put it in commercials. We've notified him. We had 19 people that said I didn't say it. And think of this. Who would say I'm at a cemetery or I'm talking about our veterans? Because nobody's taken better care. I'm so glad this came up and he brought it up. There's nobody that's taken better care of our soldiers than I have. To think that I would, in front of generals and others, say suckers and losers. We have 19 people that said it was never said by me. It was made up by him, just like Russia was made up, just like the 51 intelligence agents are made up, just like the new thing with the 16 economists are talking. It's the same thing. 51 intelligence agents said that the laptop was Russia disinformation. It wasn't. That came from his son, Hunter. It wasn't Russia disinformation. He made up the suckers and losers, so he should apologize to me right now.
Yeah, 4-star general standing to your side who was on your staff who said you said it, period. That's number one. And number two, the idea that I have to apologize to you for anything along the line. We've done more for veterans than any president has in American history. And they now are in their family. The only sacred obligation we have as a country is to care for our veterans when they come home and their families and equip them when they go to war. That's what we're doing. That's what the VA is doing now. They're doing more for veterans than ever before in our history.
Will you pledge tonight that once all legal challenges have been exhausted, that you will accept the results of this election, regardless of who wins, and you will say right now that political violence in any form is unacceptable?
Well, I shouldn't have to say that, but of course I believe that. It's totally unacceptable. And if you would see my statements that I made on Twitter at the time, and also my statement that I made in the Rose Garden, you would say it's one of the strongest statements you've ever seen. In addition to the speech I made in front of, I believe, the largest crowd I've ever spoken to, and I will tell you, nobody ever talks about that. They talk about a relatively small number of people that went to the Capitol, and in many cases were ushered in by the police. And as Nancy Pelosi said, it was her responsibility, not mine. She said that loud and clear. But the answer is, if the election is fair, free, and I want that more than anybody.
The question was, will you accept the results of the election, regardless of who wins, yes or no, please?
If it's a fair and legal and good election, absolutely. I would have much rather accepted these, but the fraud and everything else was ridiculous. And if you want, we'll have a news conference on it in a week, or we'll have another one of these in a week. But I will absolutely, there's nothing I'd rather do. It would be much easier for me to do that than I'm running again. I wasn't really going to run until I saw the horrible job he did. He's destroying our country. I would be very happy to be someplace else, in a nice location someplace. And again, no indictments, no political opponent stuff, because it's the only way he thinks he can win. But unfortunately, it's driven up my numbers and driven them up to a very high level, because the people understand it.
Well, let's see what your numbers are when this election is over.
Let's see.
You're a whiner. When you lost the first time, you continued, you appealed and appealed to courts all across the country. Not one single court in America said any of your claims had any merit, state or local, none. But you continue to provoke this lie about somehow there's all this misrepresentation, all this stealing. There is no evidence of that at all. And I tell you what, I doubt whether you'll accept it because you're such a whiner. The idea, if you lose again, you accepting anything, you can't stand the loss. Something snapped in you when you lost the last time. The idea that somehow we are this failing country. I never heard a president talk like this before. We're the envy of the world. Name me a single major country president who wouldn't trade places with the United States of America for all our problems and all our opportunities. We're the most progressive country in the world in getting things done. We're the strongest country in the world. We're a country in the world who keeps our word, and everybody trusts us, all of our allies, and those who he coddles up to, from Kim Jong-un, who he sends love letters to, and Putin, etc. They don't want to screw around with us.
I'm sometimes left with the nagging impression that Biden is using his dysfunction as a means of hiding his evil agenda. I mean, it's a perfect distraction from the things he actually did manage to say. Things far more concerning than his dementia. They don't want to screw around with us, says Biden, in referring to China and Russia. Well, this is a psychological confession to how he views the quote-unquote greatness of America as a bully state, bullying other nations to prove how great America is. It's a stunning psychological revelation and reveals the mindset of those behind all of the warmongering and lies that necessarily accompany such mongering. It's not only that, it's juvenile and childish. They don't want to screw around with us. Oh my goodness, give me a break. Consider Joe Biden's dystopian September 1st, 2022 speech in Philadelphia, during which he was spewing terrorist rhetoric that created widespread expectations of a false flag nuclear event. You can refresh your memory by checking out our September 8th, 2022 broadcast, which was titled Projection, Joe Biden's Democratic Appeal. And on his bizarre theme of democracy itself, Biden's message was all but lost in the controversy generated by his fascist demeanor, visually asserted in imagery as undemocratic as one could possibly imagine. Less about a threat to democracy, the democratic theme of his 2022 presentation revealed a message that was nothing short of confessing to a stolen election. Now, in contrast to Biden's description of America being a great nation as a bully state, Trump speaks of America as a safe place for Americans to live and work and to pursue their own happiness and objectives. In yet another projection that the last election was stolen, I thought that the crudest and most insulting point in the debate came from CNN itself via the question posed by Dana Bash. Will you pledge tonight, after all legal challenges have been exhausted, that you will accept the results of this election regardless of who wins, and that you will say right now that political violence is in any form unacceptable? Wow. Well, Trump gave the perfect response when he said, well, I shouldn't have to, because he shouldn't have had to. Dana Bash's question wasn't about the results of this election, but about the results of the last election in 2020. And referring to all legal challenges being exhausted, she was referring to the 2020 election. And Trump already did accept the results of that election, even though he knew that he had won it by a landslide. Dana wasn't really asking Trump if he would accept the election results. What she really wanted him to say was that he agreed with the election results and to cease challenging them, a practice that, when carried out by Democrats, is celebrated by CNN and the fake news media. On the issue of violence itself, Trump has never advocated political violence and has only advocated ending the political violence of the left by sending in the National Guard to protect American citizens from that violence. His offers were always refused. During the Antifa and Black Lives Matter riots, I can still recall CNN reporters standing in front of burning buildings and rioters looting stores and businesses and referring to that mayhem as peaceful protests. Just unbelievable. CNN is both a disgrace and is criminal in its reporting. And for the record, there is no such thing as political violence. It's just violence, thank you very much. Putting the adjective political in front of the word violence is yet another example where the adjective really means not. Therefore, political violence is not violence, and that's how the left gets away with calling such violence legitimate protest. You know, Biden's a very experienced liar. He attacks the messenger, you know, you're a whiner, while evading the message that America is a failing country thanks to him. Not a single thing that Biden was able to say was true. From the suckers and losers story to his assertion that every single thing Trump says is a lie. It never ceases to amaze me how those on the left continually project their own thoughts and actions onto their opponents. You know, as if the rest of us aren't noticing. Wow. Well, we have now reached the point where we have to ask, is Joe Biden just biding his time until Democrats decide what to do about him? There are two very polarized points of view on this issue, and on the one side you have those who are insisting that Biden be replaced as the Democratic presidential nominee, while on the other, the acceptance of Biden riding out this election to its conclusion. To consider that question, on this side of our upcoming bumper are Bill Whittle, Scott Ott, and Steve Green in a July 6 conversation featuring their reaction to the Biden-Trump debate. And on the return side of the bumper, Donald Trump himself, speaking in front of Mount Rushmore on July 4, 2020. Time didn't allow for us to include his entire tribute to the four presidents sculpted into Mount Rushmore, so what we'll be hearing in this selection are Trump's opening and closing remarks surrounding the tribute. But first, what to do about Biden.
Hi, I'm Scott Ott with Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, and this is our first crack at the presidential debate, so-called, from two people who were not nominees of their own parties yet, who got together with CNN and had a debate, and you think you've heard every opinion that could possibly be mustered about this debate, but you haven't heard from us yet, so you really haven't heard the truth. I'm just going to say this controversial, provocative opinion to start right off, which is Joe Biden will be the Democratic candidate for president short of his own untimely demise between now and November 5th. There is no question in my mind that he will be the candidate. Prove me wrong.
I agree with you, number one. And here's the thing.
Legally.
Yeah, they're not going to replace him. But in between now and August 4, the bedwetting, The gnashing of the teeth, the rending of the garments, and the lamentations of the women are just going to be a sight to behold. It'll fill my black little heart with joy.
I'm very happy to hear you both agree with that, because living in California, I have a genuine concern that Gavin Newsom's going to step up into this slot, because he has destroyed this state, but he's done it with such elan and such style and such and such smoothness that I listen to him sometimes and I think, oh, he's not such a bad guy. No, he's devil incarnate. He made San Francisco unlivable. He made California unlivable. He's trying to make the United States unlivable. And I'm deeply concerned about an injection of adrenaline into the Democratic Party. But you guys are both convinced there's just no way that could happen. I personally think that Kamala Harris is the insurance policy against that. Seems to me to be the case.
The only way to get rid of Joe is if Joe says if Joe pulls a Lyndon Johnson and resigns from the race and frees up his delegates, because he's got the delegates.
Yeah.
And they are committed to vote for him on the first ballot. He's the nominee. But I knew this debate was over. I knew he had already lost when he walked out on stage like C-3PO on Downers.
But everybody was saying going into the debate that this is going to hamstring Donald Trump because it's going to take away all his strong points. But the thing that struck me the most was, this is how Donald Trump should be. Donald Trump should always have these debate rules, because it kept him disciplined. You know, I mean, it kept him looking presidential.
He kind of stayed in the box. Yeah,
he did,
which was surprising. I mean, I think he still in the moments that he did talk, I thought he was more freewheeling than the facts allowed at sometimes. But I think that he was smart in that when they did that split screen. And when poor Joe Biden was just stumbling all over himself, Trump just watched him stumble. And almost the look on his face was like, it was not amusement. It was more like
sadness.
It was almost sadness. Yeah, was like,
That was exactly, if I could have advised him prior to this, I would have said, your attitude should be not that this guy's an idiot, but that this is an American tragedy that is affecting the entire country. And can we please let this man go and live out the rest of his days without being forced into these situations by people unknown for reasons also unknown, but probably nefarious. I would have had him.
Even when Trump said, I don't know what he said at the end of that last sentence, I don't think he does either. Yeah. It didn't sound like sharply sarcastic, like the way he normally talks. It sounded like,
nope.
Wow, that's really sad that there's a guy who's up here representing himself as president of the United States and is not sure what he's saying, and I don't know what he's saying.
That was the line of the night, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
That was the defining line of the debate.
But Scott's right. But the delivery was perfect.
Pitch perfect. I mean, Trump's a TV guy. He's been doing TV and entertainment for 30 years. He's very good at it. But he does need that discipline when he needs to appear presidential, as Scott said, and he certainly pulled that off. But for me, the tell for Biden during the debate, once he was actually up there at the was when he wasn't talking and he was doing that slack-jawed, mouth-breathing thing, and he never seemed to know quite where he was supposed to be looking.
The takes of all of the commentators, the liberal commentators, was that this is a catastrophe and we have to find somebody else. And to me, the real news story is watching the mainstream media walk back their demands that he step down and suddenly start getting the memos that are flowing from wherever memos flow from, saying, no, this is going to be the guy. But I think that, as many people have pointed out, the real indictment is not the indictment of Biden. It's the indictment of the press that has lied to the American people for so long and never shown this side of him. So the editorial board of the New York Times says that the man is not capable of becoming of being president due to his mental incapacity. And then they say, however, vote for this guy.
Yeah. The next sentence says, such is the danger that Trump represents.
And here's the part I'm having a hard time with, the danger that Trump represents, right? Trump is going to make sure that martial law rules in the country, that he will never leave office, that he's going to be president for life, that the liberals will be taken off into camps and either executed or re-educated through shock therapy and all these other things. And all of this stuff would be believable to idiots if he had not already been president. And this is the thing that I simply cannot that I cannot get over. This is exactly what they said about him in 2016. And then we had 4 years of him as being, if Trump gets into office, he's threatening retribution. Oh, you mean the way he didn't commit retribution against Hillary, but the way that the second he was out of office, you immediately went down and raided his home, took these unprecedented Banana Republic steps and have done nothing but persecute the guy since then. You're now saying that he's going to come back angry and want to do something about that, and this is like some kind of a problem?
Whether you like Trump, love Trump, or hate or despise him, if he's elected president in November, and I hope he is, he will be held accountable because he will be acting as the president that he is capable of acting as. He's done it before. He can still do it again. Joe Biden will not be held accountable as president because he will not be in charge of his own administration, just as he already is not now.
Our people have a great memory. They will never forget the destruction of statues and monuments to George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant, abolitionists, and many others. The violent mayhem we have seen in the streets and cities that are run by liberal Democrats in every case is the predictable result of years of extreme indoctrination and bias in education, journalism, and other cultural institutions. Against every law of society and nature, our children are taught in school to hate their own country and to believe that the men and women who built it were not heroes, but that were villains. The radical view of American history is a web of lies. All perspective is removed. Every virtue is obscured. Every motive is twisted. Every fact is distorted. And every flaw is magnified until the history is purged and the record is disfigured beyond all recognition. This movement is openly attacking the legacies of every person on Mount Rushmore. They defile the memory of Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Roosevelt. Today, we will set history and history's records straight. Before these figures were immortalized in stone, they were American giants in full flesh and blood, gallant men whose intrepid deeds unleashed the greatest leap of human advancement the world has ever known. No movement that seeks to dismantle these treasured American legacies can possibly have a love of America at its heart. Can't happen. No person who remains quiet at the destruction of this resplendent heritage can possibly lead us to a better future. The radical ideology attacking our country advances under the banner of social justice. But in truth, it would demolish both justice and society. It would transform justice into an instrument of division and vengeance. And it would turn our free and inclusive society into a place of repression, domination, and exclusion. They want to silence us, but we will not be silenced.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. And what we just heard was Donald Trump's opening and closing remarks made on July 4th, 2020, in front of Mount Rushmore, in a delivery and manner that was more dignified and presidential than Biden could ever hope to aspire. Trump paid tribute to the four presidents whose images appear as the 60-foot-tall sculptures featuring George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln. Said Trump, "Our people will never forget the destruction of statues and monuments, the violent mayhem of liberal Democrats in every case." And so much for Trump's view on violence. From his July 4th comments, it's clear to me that Trump understands the nature of America's crisis far better and in a deeper way than most Americans. To hear him zero in on the banner of quote-unquote social justice, which he recognizes as being destructive to both justice and society, is a remarkable philosophical acknowledgement. This is yet another case where an adjective means not. Putting the word social in front of justice is the same as using adjectives to negate the meaning of the noun that they are attempting to describe. Just as alt-right means not right, so too social justice means not justice. In the past, Trump has also correctly and in the proper context identified America as a fascist state. He's using rather sophisticated language that's not typical of your average politician. "The radical view of history is a web of lies, every fact distorted and twisted," asserts Trump, while in the process describing the nature of an information war. It cannot be overstated that with the advent of the internet, truth can finally be discerned and distinguished from the lies that officialdom has been spewing since time immemorial. Salim Mansour and I had an interesting exchange last week about the nature of narratives versus the objective facts. Before moving on, I just wanted to acknowledge the elections that were recently held in Europe, most notably in Britain and France. While the results seemed bizarre to those who equate democracy with simple majority rule, what I found fascinating about the post-election commentaries that I've heard so far is the debate over whether the results represent a shift to the left or to the right, something we'll certainly have to take a look at later when the dust settles a bit. But right now, our election focus is on the American election. On this side of our upcoming bumper, we hear a leftist warning, an expose of Trump's radical agenda 47, which personally I think sounds like a great ad for Trump, not a warning against him. I really don't have a lot more to say about agenda 47 other than to say it sounds pretty good to me. What I do have a lot to say about and to criticize are the opinions of someone I usually agree with, save for his anarchist views, Michael Malice. Malice sees no difference between Biden and Trump, and in the process exposes his own anarchistic Achilles heel, namely that he has no feasible alternatives to offer when it comes to the governance of humanity. And most disturbingly, just listen to what he says on the subject of violence. Anarchy indeed. But first, here's Agenda 47.
And here are the first 15 promises he has made if he is reelected. This is from Agenda 47. And you can read all of these on his website. First, he promises that he will carry out the largest domestic deportation operation in history. He will also ask for the death sentence for anyone convicted of human trafficking. He will close the Department of Education and return all education standards to the states to decide. He will put prayer back into school, and he will criminalize any race-based advantage programs. He will end the Affordable Care Act. He will ban gender-affirming care for adults and children, and he will ban any federal dollars from going towards gender-affirming care, which means anyone with government-provided health care will no longer be able to access gender-affirming care except for Viagra and Cialis. Those will still be available. He will propose a constitutional amendment that gives a term limit to Congress. He will deploy the Department of Justice to investigate the Biden crime family and any of his adversaries or political rivals. He will immediately pardon all of the January 6thers, and he will create a task force to investigate anyone who arrested, charged, or imprisoned a January 6er. He will increase the penalties for underage criminal offenders, strengthen immunity for police officers, and deploy the National Guard to patrol woke cities. On day one, he will reassess our participation in NATO and says that every European country needs to pay the United States for protection. He will also restore the wonderful travel ban for Muslims coming to America. He will build freedom cities. This is 10 new cities built on federal land. He will award them to areas with the best development proposals, and he will prioritize moving young families to these freedom cities. He will kill all e-vehicles and e-vehicle legislation, seeking to replace that with the development of a flying car. He believes that we could create a car that vertically takes off. He will remove all of the limits on American natural gas exports and drill, baby, drill for oil domestically. He will impose a tariff of up to 60% on Chinese imports. He will extend the 2017 tax cuts and drop the corporate tax rate from 21% to 15%. He will push Congress to pass legislation that would give every American the right to concealed carry anywhere at any time. And he will revoke any gun restrictions or legislation that seeks to inhibit people's ability to own guns that's been passed in the last several years. He will demand that Europe pay back all the money we gave Ukraine, and then he will use all of that money to recruit for the American military. And he will take billions and billions of dollars from private university endowments by taxing, fining, and suing the universities. He specifically names Harvard in this one. And then he will use that money to create the American Academy. It is a free online college that will be free of wokeness that he will force employers to recognize as a bachelor's degree equivalent. So that's Agenda 47.
We're not voting our way out of this.
What does that mean?
It means, just think about it. Like, if you think that this choice you make in November, like, if you make, you have to look at it really carefully.
Yeah.
And if you make that right choice, this problem is going to be resolved or even ameliorated. If you stop and think about it for 5 minutes, I don't think anyone who's quasi-rational with a straight face would be like, wait, that makes no sense.
But explain what you mean by
meaning that if you have Biden again or if you have Trump.
We're in the same predicament.
Right.
So you don't see Trump as this great escape, this great rescue from...
We ran that experiment. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. It's not like he wasn't president before.
So why do people see it as such?
Because they're told that there's this binary... Right. And if you don't like this team, you got to like the other one. What's his name? Noam Chomsky, who's another anarchist. Noam Chomsky has this whole point about the way to control a population is to have a very intense debate, but within strictly delimited parameters.
Mm.
Right. So if the answer is always going to be between like 5 and 6 and 1 through 5
then
and
it doesn't
6 through 10
matter who wins.
Right.
Oh, it's genius.
Yeah.
So a way my friend put it was CNN is what you're supposed to think and Fox is what you're allowed to think. But other than that, like that's your little box.
And labeling these other sides as extreme left or extreme right. Is this all part of that?
Exactly, because that's the end of the box, right? You know where the borders are.
So do we not have a civic duty to vote? There's some kid that's listening that just turned 18. It's like, man, I can't wait to vote in this election.
He's
this
involved in his community.
I would never tell, I'm not even joking. I would not tell someone, especially a black person, not to vote because it does mean something for certain communities, like in all seriousness.
Yeah.
But the opportunity cost, that time it spends you to vote, you could be adopting a dog, reading to an old person
who's
lonely.
Bombing a postal office.
I can't advocate like violence against the government on camera, but I also don't know how to finish this sentence. In all seriousness, the alternative is local. And be the best person you can be an asset to your community, be a good dad or friend or whatever. And that is the alternative to this facade and not buying in. There's not that much. The lie of democracy is this idea that like the president really cares about what you think. Like there's, how can he care about 300 million people? It doesn't make sense. But I mean, the other issue is government is doing a very good job, especially in cities, of protecting criminals from their consequences, not protecting law-abiding citizens.
Yeah.
So as a Texan, one of the reasons I lived in Texas now is if someone breaks into my house, I don't have to worry about protecting my home.
You can shoot them.
Where I could shoot them. Whereas here, I'd be the one going to jail. Mm-hmm. And that's a complete inversion of like a basic decency of any society.
Now, I'm not questioning your disdain of the government. I completely get that. What I'm asking for is, because
we need security. A lot of people think anarchism means if you abolish the government monopoly and policing. I'm just clarifying for them.
Yes.
That's like, oh, you think everyone's going to be nice and no one's going to be a criminal. No, I think
it's important to clarify.
Yeah.
It's just important to
know that like, no, criminals aren't going to be able on the street every 5 minutes. They're going to be dealt with.
A capitalist society, especially once financial reward is there, everybody's very corruptible, and local government even then can be just as corruptible as...
For local government. What do you mean?
Or local governance or whatever. Whoever is that power within that small tribe, whoever gets power is essentially a dictator.
I think he's saying no power. I think he's saying...
People say, where does anarchism exist? Anarchism is a type of government.
It is
a relationship, and the creation of these systems across time, across the world, across centuries are examples of anarchism in practice.
We're not voting ourselves out of this, declares Michael Malice. And you know, in one sense, he is right. But not for the reasons he cites in arriving at his conclusion. His skepticism is based on the political system, the electoral system as he understands it. He recognizes that the presented binary is a fake one, and he says that left and right represent the ends of the box of the allowable political debate. And given that he sees no difference between the left and right, isn't that kind of a meaningless statement? Left and right are polarities, not two ends of an imaginary spectrum that represents a single philosophy. As a self-proclaimed anarchist, it's clear that Malice holds a deep personal contempt for all things political, from electoral politics to the existence of government itself. But if we can't vote our way out of tyranny, does it then follow that we couldn't vote our way into tyranny? Because I don't think that's the case. If voting is irrelevant, then surely the cause of our tyranny or of our freedom has nothing to do with voting. And again, I don't think that's the case. You can't vote yourself out of any particular political condition unless you first have a candidate or party totally committed towards that goal. That would be a party on the true right, not a myriad of parties that are all on the left. And Michael Malice is not doing any favors for anarchism when he says something like, I can't advocate violence against the government on camera, but I also don't know how to finish this sentence. Wow. You know, he's subconsciously bowing to the unavoidable political reality that when it comes to politics, there are only two ways to resolve disputes, ballots or bullets. And given that he's already abandoned the former, ballots, he's backed himself into a corner advocating the latter, bullets, which is perfectly consistent with all anarchical practice, and why he can't finish that sentence on camera. Whether we get Biden or Trump, there's no difference, he says. Well, really? Does Malice actually believe that Biden's also going to implement Trump's Agenda 47 that we just heard about? Trump was there before and did nothing, says Malice, in a statement that, you know, it leaves me utterly baffled. Yeah, right. Trump did nothing like being the first president in my lifetime to not start a war. For a president who, quote-unquote, did nothing and is the same as the deep state, you'd think that the deep state would be overjoyed by Trump getting elected, especially with the powerful majority that Trump commands. And then Malice says this. I couldn't believe it. Quote, I would never tell anyone, especially a black person, not to vote because it does make a difference for some communities. The opportunity cost, the time it takes to vote, you could be adopting a pet dog, end quote. I never thought I'd see Malice play the race card. So now voting can make a difference, but only if you're black. And to say that the reason not to vote is the opportunity cost, I mean, that's kind of insulting. And it's an admission that he doesn't understand the significance of the electoral process. Again, he's making another economic evaluation of a far deeper principle and value, that of freedom itself. But it's clear that Malice, like all anarchists I've listened to, read, and encountered in person, is not capable of articulating a rational defense of what he calls anarchism, which, as he says, quote, anarchism isn't a type of government, it's a relationship, end quote, which precisely confirms the definition of anarchism that I have several times read from Tom Burnham's Dictionary of Misinformation, quote, as a philosophy, anarchism assumes a system in which the individual is free and living in peace, end quote. Well, again, how convenient that you get to assume a system that you've never been able to describe or even define. If anarchy operates on an assumptive system, well, small wonder it can't objectively be defined. Anarchists are unable to describe any rational system of law enforcement or justice, even though Malice assures us that we need security, and many people think that anarchism means criminality. They'll be dealt with. Yeah. Dealt with? How? By whom? Under what authority? Under what definitions of individual rights and responsibilities? Who decides what criminal is? Over what geographic jurisdiction? Under what legal system and laws? The rage and anger that I have received whenever I've presented these questions and issues to my libertarian and anarchist friends and acquaintances is something truly amazing to behold. You know, looking back, it's not unlike the rage and anger of COVID vaccine advocates when confronted with objective and official statistics concerning every aspect of those experimental gene therapies. Basically, when people are confronted with questions or evidence that refute their cherished beliefs, and when they cannot counter them, well, don't expect them to thank you for bringing those issues to their attention. I've said it before and I'll say it again now. We are living in a state of anarchy now, today, currently, because we have no government accessible to the people that it supposedly governs and represents. What we have is rule by the state, not governance in a democratic government. Anarchism and libertarianism, in general, skip the metaphysical and epistemological grounds for this quote-unquote relationship that they call anarchism. During Malice's discussion with Walter Block that we featured a few episodes back, Dr. Block, upon describing his admiration for the philosophy of Ayn Rand, literally said that he didn't really understand her metaphysics and epistemology, but really liked her economics. That's putting the cart before the horse, because a healthy economic environment is a consequence of the metaphysical and epistemological philosophy on which one operates. And that's why libertarians and conservatives have been so incompetent at governance, meaning that they're always drifting to the left. They never make a single move towards the right. They only see the economic dimension of their ideologies. Economists think that introducing economically free markets and capitalism to tyrannical states operating on central planning and authoritarianism will eventually cure those states and cause them to introduce freedom to their social and political realms as well. But this is simply not the case and has never demonstrated itself to be so. I mean, we're told that China has embraced capitalism, but that's not true. China has decreased its restrictions on many of its economic markets, but it also has moved in the opposite direction socially and politically. The country is as dedicated to communism and the surveillance state as it ever has been. Government protects criminals from consequences, while law-abiding citizens are sent to jail, says Malice. But instead of advocating that government should protect the law-abiding and send criminals to jail, he advocates the elimination of government entirely. What kind of thinking is that? Worse, it's not the government, quote-unquote, that protects criminals from consequences. It's those on the left who are in control of the government. You know, the criminals who are currently running the government. The fundamental problem is not the existence of governments or the shortcomings of any given electoral system, which are easily fixable. The quote-unquote problem is with the people, who either knowingly or unwittingly accept the ideologies of the left, and in democratic terms, that's still a majority. It's not that we can't vote ourselves out of this mess, it's that we have to stop voting ourselves into the mess. But who will provide the necessary political option for us to be able to vote ourselves out of the mess? I love this quote that was sent to me by Danielle, by George MacDonald, who is a famous poet and author from Scotland, lived around the later 1800s, and he said, "It is not the nature of politics that the best men should be elected. The best men do not want to govern their fellow men." Well, that's an interesting quote, especially in light of Trump's many references to his wishing that he could just stay home and enjoy his life rather than having to run as president. You know, I've heard him say that many times, and sometimes it makes me cringe a bit. But in the language of George MacDonald, that would make Trump one of the quote-unquote best men. And that kind of speaks to a very fundamental problem for those of us who do not lust for power. Freedom-minded people are loath to making arbitrary laws, rules, and regulations for others to have to obey. And that's why they avoid politics in general. But politics is unavoidable, and so we should be encouraging and supporting good people to get involved in politics for individualism and freedom. It is a process of eternal vigilance, not just voting. Again, from George MacDonald. Free will is not the liberty to do what one likes, but the power of doing what one sees ought to be done, even in the very face of otherwise overwhelming impulse. There lies freedom indeed. And wow, that is a wonderful description of free will. To which I will add, whatever your impulse, you know what ought to be done by joining us again next week when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be all right.
I'm the one that they're singing about. Yeah, I'm the Stars and Stripes Forever. Star Spangled Banner. You can call me Old Glory, but let's just keep it simple. Just call me Flag. Oh, say, can you see? Okay. Still flag humor. Well, you probably don't recognize me. You say, who is that, Evel Knievel? No way. Yeah, you see, you can't recognize me because...
I'm in my birthday suit, yes.
I'm wearing the original 13 here. Yeah. I remember Miss Betsy sitting there going,
oh, this could be the start of something big. Whoa. Oh, Tom, don't be a pain.
Yes. I was born June 14th, 1777. That makes me a Gemini. Kind of unpredictable, crazy. Yes. I like the outdoors, and I'm the life of any party, whether it be Republican, Democrat, Independent, Socialist, anything libertarian, I'll be there. You know, I'm 204 years old. People say, Flag, how do you stay so young? Is it jogging? No. Is it tennis? No. It's waving. Billowing, furling, and unfurling. Richard Simmons, eat your heart out. Yeah. Yeah, but it hasn't always been easy for me, though. I had a tough puberty. Yeah, war, famine, invasion. And 1861, well, I had a little skin problem that broke out into 34 stars. But now, well, a little patience, and look what we got now. Look at this. Hold on here. Ha-ha! Ha-ha! Everybody's on here. Look at this. Alaska. Hawaii. Yeah, we got your Tennessee. How are you doing today? Here's Vermont. You can't get there from here. Oh, and there's California. For sure, totally. Like I said before, you know, I had a tough time for a while. I've been in a lot of wars. They fired missiles and muskets at me, but, you know, come the dawn's early light, I'm still there. You know what I'm talking about? And, you know, I've been made into everything from designer jeans to T-shirts, and I've even been a cape for Mick Jagger. Well, all right! The rocket's red glare! Well, all right! But people haven't always been respectful to me. Sometimes it's been tough. There have been some people try and spit on me, trample me, burn me. Foreigners and occasionally some Americans too, but I don't let it get me down because I'm not a stay-at-home kind of flag. You know, I've been to Europe. I've been to both North and South Pole. I was at Iwo Jima. Recently, I've even been to the moon. You see me in all sorts of different postures. When I'm like this, that means everything is okay. When I'm upside down, well, put on your Mae West and hit the deck. But when I'm like this, well, that's not my favorite position because, well, that's half-mast. I don't mean to bum you out. I didn't come here to depress you. But I got to tell you something honestly. I haven't been getting out much lately. I guess it's not very chic to put up the flag anymore, you know? Muffin and I have a flag, but we haven't found it for very long. Hey, but look at it this way. Don't look at it as saluting me. Look at it as saluting yourselves. You know, hey, I'm just a flag, a symbol. You're the people. If I may say so from here, long may you wave.